Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Business Beyond Borders, where we have made it our mission to talk to global experts and professionals, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and founders from a variety of industries and fields, as we tackle the many aspects of scaling an international business. The goal here is to collect valuable insights and share in-depth knowledge so that you too can apply the winning techniques and strategies to go global and take your business to the world. Today's episode of Business Beyond Borders is a follow-up from a previous episode where I spoke to Cynthia as she highlighted some of the common mistakes companies make when choosing a new international market. This time around, we delve a little deeper into the market selection process, outlining what to consider before making the decision and discussing the questions you should be asking to assess the risk in order to increase your chances of success. Thought we'd start off by maybe getting your thoughts on what advice you'd give someone looking to expand internationally and how to avoid these mistakes from the get-go.
Look, I'd say depending on the size of what you are doing, you know, if you are thinking of the financial piece, if you are making decisions that are worth more than a couple of $100,000, mm-hmm. It is worth investing in really good financial modeling to allow you to predict the future with some degree of certainty.
Yeah.
So that you're not just doing it off numbers you did on the back of a coaster at the pub.
Yeah.
Or just holding a wet finger up in the wind. You know, you've got some numbers where you can make adjustments and you can run scenarios and have some idea about how things might go depending on what you do. I think that's really important. I think it's really worth sitting down and doing some capacity planning exercises when it comes to team. Mm. And thinking about how the staffing's working for you at the present time. And then looking ahead and trying to anticipate what international stuff you'll be doing in 12 months and what you will need to do to prepare for that and whether you can afford to do that or when you'll need to bring more people on if you can afford it.
Yeah. Well, I can imagine going internationally, the last thing you want is it to affect your domestic business.
Yeah. But it really can if you don't staff it properly.
Yeah.
It really can. And it can affect all areas of your life. You know, it can affect your health, it can affect your family life. It can, as we've said, affect the domestic business. So that's really important. Mm-hmm. And look, on systems, I mean, I think businesses of all sizes, whether they're operating internationally or not, should be really focusing on getting their systems in order. But I would say as you are going international, stand back and actually audit your systems and see what you've got and what you need to improve. You know, do an exercise and say, well, where are we on a scale of 1 to 10 on systems? Which ones do we need to fix right now? You know, do we have a financial system that can be used and accessed simultaneously in several countries at the same time if we've got people working around the world? Do we have a sales funnel that's going to work pretty much anywhere in the world? Mm-hmm. You know, do we have a product creation system that just works and is well documented so that people know how to do their job without talking to the founder? Does everybody have a position description? All that kind of stuff.
It's interesting stuff, I have to say. And depending on the size of the business, I guess, if you're looking to launch internationally and you're about to invest some time and resources into getting the right answers, what kind of investment, both time and money-wise, would you expect companies to make before they actually pull the trigger on, you know, entering a new market?
Look, it's kind of a how long is a piece of string question. So there are a few things to take into account. Where you want to go, you know, so is it going to be a difficult market? Because a difficult market will often cost more than one that is easy because there'll be more hoops to jump and more things to work around. How do you want to go in? So if you are, let's say you make bikinis and you send them via DHL all around the world and you sell from your website. That kind of going international is way less expensive than if you say, okay, well, we have to set up a fully fledged office and staff it with 5 local people. Or we're going to go to another country and acquire a company. I mean, that's a much different and more expensive proposition. So how you go in is going to have an effect on cost. And then the other thing that affects it is, well, how much time are you going to dedicate to doing the project? So if you had somebody who was solely dedicated to doing the international piece, they could probably spend several months working on it intensively. Then you'd be ready to launch. But if you're a small business and you've only got a couple of founders and you still have to run the business in the home country, it's going to be a longer process because you can only devote a little time to it each week or each month.
Yeah.
So you might be looking at a year before you can launch. I mean, we've worked with clients who've been very consistent as small businesses, and they have managed to go into new markets and make sales within 4 or 5 months.
Yeah.
That's certainly not everybody. Some people have worked on it for a year and it's still not ready to go.
Yeah.
But I'd say if you are disciplined about it and you can put some effort and energy and some investment behind it, 6 months to a year for a smaller business, probably shorter for a larger one.
Yeah. Interesting. And then, so what kind of like data and trends are you looking for in a new potential market? So say you're an Australian company, you're looking to enter the UK, for example. What kind of data, what trends are you looking to find in terms of, is it market share, how much market share there is?
Look, you can pretty much break down, and again, look, this is a massive, massive topic, but if you're going to talk about it simply and break it down into a few pieces, you would basically look at macroeconomic data, microeconomic data and company data.
Yeah.
And so you're trying to build up pictures around different bits of the economy. So on the macroeconomic side, you might be comparing GDP in different countries. You might be having a look at different countries to say, well, where is the economy going? So if you have got two markets that are next to each other, let's say you're looking at ASEAN markets and you've got two markets in ASEAN, two Asian markets, and you're trying to decide, well, we don't have the resources to do both, which should we go to?
Yeah.
You might start by looking at the trends. And if you saw that one was accelerating and one was decelerating, then you'd probably say, look, we're going to go to the one that's accelerating because the market is growing, people's capacity to spend is growing, and in the environment that's decelerating, maybe that's not the case. Now, that's a very simplistic kind of analysis, but you need to be looking at, well, what's the economy doing?
Yeah.
You need to look at, in a trend sense, what are the trends within your industry?
Mm-hmm.
So let's say, for example, that you sell fireproof doors.
Mm-hmm.
You would be wanting to go to places where those fireproof doors are going to be used, and where would fireproof doors be most in demand? Mm-hmm. Probably in somewhere where there was a lot of new building going on, where there were a lot of buildings that needed fireproof doors going up. So cities that have lots of office tower construction and lots of hotels in play. So those are the kind of trends that you're looking for. Depending on what you sell, you might be looking to see, well, is the market for our product in this particular country a developed one? You know, are we going into a mature market and having to come in as a new brand and really compete?
Mm-hmm.
Or are we going into a market where there's a blank canvas and nobody's selling what we sell for whatever reason, and there's a space for us to go in and start selling?
Yeah.
Or you might be looking at the fact that, well, nobody's selling what we're proposing to sell. That's a bit weird. I wonder if there's some reason that they're not selling it. And then you go in and you find out that there is a reason. So you need to be looking at what's happening in your industry, in the country that you actually want to go to.
Yep.
So those are some of the things that you need to look for in terms of trends. In terms of data, you know, microeconomic data is pretty important. And when I talk about microeconomic data, I'm talking basically about market sizing.
Mm-hmm.
So calculating things like the size of your total addressable market.
Mm-hmm.
And for anybody who doesn't know what that is, the total addressable market, or the TAM, is how many people you could reach if you could capture the entire market for that product. So if you sold water, the TAM for the sale of water would be, well, how much water is consumed in the world and what is the average price per liter of water?
Mm-hmm.
How many times the liters consumed by the price?
Mm.
That gives you a sense of the TAM. And that's like an incredibly general answer, but the TAM is basically you're looking at the size of the entire market.
Mm-hmm.
Then you might be looking at the total addressable market for a particular country. You might be saying, well, what's the total addressable market for India for razors? You know, we sell disposable razors, and then you need to go through and work out, well, how many people, if you had no competition and you could get 100% of the market share, how many people could you sell to?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to filter it down. You need to look at what's called the serviceable addressable market. That is really about, well, how many people can we reach with our messaging?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're a Mahar and you're sitting in Perth and you're going to sell disposable razors to Perth, and you make them in the back garden shed. And you also do all the delivery and the marketing. You have to think, well, how much marketing can I get out there? You know, what percentage of the market in India can I actually reach with my Facebook ads?
Yeah.
And then that will whittle it down further. And then once you've got that far, you need to look at the serviceable address, the serviceable obtainable market. And that is really about, well, how much of all those people we can speak to with our Facebook ads, what percentage of those people are actually going to buy our razors? And how many can we produce? So maybe you work out that India has 1 billion people in it. Let's say 400 million of those people use razors. You can get to 40 million of them with your marketing. And of that, 20 million might want to buy your razors, but oh, you can only make 2,000 razors a year because you're making them in your back shed by yourself part-time while you're also running the marketing. And suddenly the market that you can address is much smaller. So there's this whole set of calculations going on, trying to balance up what is the opportunity and then what is the feasibility, what is possible and what can we actually deliver.
And then just, I mean, in an effort to give people, the listeners, as much value as possible on the execution of these, how would you go about gathering this type of information?
There are a few ways you can do it. You can buy reports off the shelf from a range of different outlets that provide commercial intelligence. Now, those are great because they're credible and they're put together by serious people who know how to run market research. So there are some real positives there. It saves you a lot of time. You can pay several thousand dollars and get a report. The downside to that is that the report will not be customized to your particular circumstances. So there is a starting point there in terms of buying research. You can also find an enormous amount of stuff out there in the public domain for free. So, you know, if you don't have the money to pay thousands of dollars for a report and you've got a bit of patience and you know, you're relatively smart, you can go and put some of that stuff together. But the downside there is it's very, very time consuming. And sometimes you're going to need to go and speak to people in the market and not just rely on what Google says. You know, you'll want to go and actually interrogate people in the market and say, look, we're thinking of providing this. How does that fit with what you have in mind? What problems do you have? How can we solve them? And you might not be able to do that, you know, because you're Maha in his back shed making his razors, and he doesn't know anybody. He doesn't know any Indian customers he can call and ask them if this razor meets what they need. And so the third way that you can do it is that you can get people who specialize in this kind of stuff, like Deeran & Associates, to actually go and put that research together for you. You can go and say, look, we want exactly these questions answered. And then what we would do and what other people who do the same kind of work would do is that we would go and put that together and write a customized report for you and pull that from a variety of sources, things that are in the public domain, interviews with your target client group, and we would put together and curate a report that specifically answers the questions that you want answered.
And that's it. So you'd be willing to put that kind of investment to make the decisions moving forward, whereas example of Bunnings again, you know, they probably didn't go and do the right thing in that sense and really burnt through $1 billion plus.
And I don't know exactly what research they did or didn't do, but what I've seen over the course of time is that the people who are prepared to make an investment get a return on that investment, you know, far outstrips the investment. When people who don't do anything and usually do trial and error, you go into markets randomly and skimp on the prep and the stuff that they need to do, often just find themselves running into problems that they hadn't anticipated. Now, it doesn't always tank the international business, but sometimes it does. I have seen examples of where people thought there was a market for something or made assumptions about how things were going to be, were too stingy to invest anything in it. And several years later, are actually not even working internationally anymore because they had a bad experience.
And they didn't really know when to pull the plug.
Or they just did it and it wasn't a disaster, but it also didn't give them what they thought they'd get. And then they regretfully folded the international operation and they sort of thought, well, wish we'd known this at the start. And the answer is, well, you could have known it at the start. If you just either invested the time in doing it yourself or made the investment to have somebody help you and get the answers out.
Yeah. Okay, well then say you are looking to choose a specific market. How do you, after doing this research and asking the right questions, what are you looking for and how do you know when to draw the line and make the decision not to enter a specific market?
Well, look, you really have to understand what your return on investment is going to be. Mm-hmm. Unless you've got, you know, a lot of spare time, energy and cash to play around with.
Yeah.
And if you look at it and as you do the calculation, you realize that you could get a better return by just staying in your home market and expanding your operations there. Mm-hmm. Then you should really consider whether it's something that you want to do. And this is why I say you need to understand at the start why you are doing it. You know, are you going into a market just to increase your volume of sales?
Yeah.
Is it to increase your margin? Mm-hmm. Is it so that you can scale production because you want to get one of those huge customers so you can ramp up production?
Yeah.
And so you need to understand what is the return on investment that we need to make this worthwhile? Mm-hmm. And do we feel reasonably confident that if we get this right, this will give us a better return on investment than we would get if we just continued what we are doing and possibly expanded organically and gradually in our home market?
Yeah.
So it's a lot of it is really linked back to, well, why are you doing what you're doing? Mm. What are you hoping it will deliver for you?
Well, I think we're going to end it at that. You've given us a lot to digest and I'm sure the listeners got a lot out of that. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on before we call it a day?
No, thanks so much for having me on my show.
Absolute pleasure. And I look forward to the next chat where we will again break down some important aspects of international expansion.
See you soon.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. This is Maher again. And just a few things before you head off. Firstly, if you feel you have gained valuable insights from the show, make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss another episode. More importantly, don't forget to tell your fellow entrepreneur and business leader friends that this is the best podcast to tune into if they're looking to take on the world with their products and services. Also, if you are loving the podcast, please take the time to rate and review as it's one of the best ways for us to get loads of free value into the hands of other entrepreneurs. And lastly, make sure to visit DearinAssociates.com. That's D-E-A-R-I-N Associates.com. Where we have plenty of free resources and tools for you to get clarity and build momentum with your international venture. If you go there, you'll find the Blueprint to International Success, ebooks, our latest blog posts, and more. So be sure to check it out. And until next time, this is me encouraging you to expand your vision and wishing you all the best as you continue your global journey.